Hello there, friends. Andrew with the Bangs here. This is going to be a very quick intro. So here's the deal. What do you do when you're friends with two people or two groups and they don't like each other or there's an altercation verbally, but you're like, I'm friends with both of them. What do I do? What do I do, Pastor Paul? So that's what this interview is what do I do when your friends or familiar or on good terms with two different groups or people or whatever, and they have some not nice back and forths. What do you do there? When you're stuck in the middle. Yeah, I think that's a good enough summation. This might be one of the quickest intros I've ever done, so you're welcome. And without further ado, here is Pastor Paul Vanderclay.
Well, I do think the topic is important, and it's something that I wrestle with because, I mean, this sort of arose out of the whole decoding the gurus. So you had them on your channel, which was interesting. And of course, they were on Rebel Wisdom, and I've bumped into one of them on Twitter and had a little bit of back and forth with him, although I hate doing back and forth on Twitter. Back and forth on Twitter rarely ends well unless it's with someone that you have a degree of confidence that that you can be on the same page, as Jordan Peterson has recently relearned, because he's retreated from Twitter again.
That's probably wise.
That's probably wise. I find it so funny when he says, "I've asked my staff to change the password." It's like, I don't trust myself with this power.
Well, I see. I recently made a video about. See, I send you stuff of mine that I want you to watch because if I send it, you'll watch it. I feel like you're busy otherwise. But who am I one to complain when you're here now and chatting with me?
I still haven't watched the intimacy video.
That's okay. It's okay. I'll just Mark will tell you about it. He keeps on
I
telling
know
me about
he continues to tell me about
it.
it, and I've actually I did see parts of it. I did see parts of it. So,
Well, that counts, but
but the bigger topic of
no, but wait, Paul.
accountability.
Okay, Twitter video. I made okay. Sorry. Segues. Too many segues. I made a quick Twitter video about what you're describing, about how to be on Twitter, and it doesn't go well unless you know the person slightly, a little bit outside of Twitter. And that doesn't mean you have to be online. Sorry, offline. It can be online, like on a Discord server, or even chatting. You can like, or even over in DMs makes it a better than out in public. Anyways, sorry, so that's what it was about. My little, it was like only like an 8 minute Twitter video about why I have a good time there and my methods.
Well, I don't find Twitter to be a cesspool either, partly because I don't have 2 million or even 100,000 followers. I think once you get to a certain level of prominence, then you sort of create your own weather where there's enough you can get enough critical mass to have everyone enjoying piling on someone. And I think I'm at a 7,500 or something like that. And that's not enough. And I also don't, generally speaking, do back and forth on Twitter. If the minute I see a conversation sort of going sideways, I leave it, because I don't think Twitter is a
It's not
broad enough,
charitable.
no, and it's not a broad enough forum to actually engage in much nuance or even texture, or, as Mark would want to say, intimacy. You just don't know each other enough. And it's really easy to be snarky on Twitter. But the so I didn't know anything about decoding the gurus until Rebel Wisdom did a conversation with them, and I've never listened to any of their podcasts. But I can imagine, and this is the problem. We've lost Andrea.
No, sorry, I just turned my light down because it's still too bright.
Oh, okay.
I just literally stepped out of the
I thought,
screen.
well, we're getting boring already, and Andrea doesn't even want to be in her own conversation. She's like, "Ah, that's enough. 2 minutes, we're done."
Stare at my wall. That's why I'm asking.
Stare at the wall. That's exactly the kind of wall Rick wants to build in one of our rooms to have a studio. Where was I going with this?
Decoding the Gurus. You haven't listened to them yet, or
which is unfair because I don't know what degree they decode.
Well, have you not watched any of my conversations with them?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well, I have two. One they were first starting out. Sorry, no, technically three. I had one early on with Chris Kavanaugh, before he had started. He and Matt started Decoding the Gurus. I just was like interested in Chris because this is back when I was starting to see some things that I'm like, oh, I really like these IDW people, but I'm seeing some flaws. And he was pointing out some things that I was like, oh, that's a fair critique, you know? And so I asked him on. And well, first of all, he's a specialist. Like, he teaches anthropology of ritual. Secondly, he loves going through like pop culture intenseness of like Joe Rogan and the bros. He combs through it like he likes combing through it like fine tooth comb combing through like inconsistencies there. So to me, it's like that's a lot. I'm like, I can't keep up, man. I only like watching stuff that I'm like, yay, as opposed to making me angry. But he likes that. He's into that. But I interviewed him first for the first bit about what he does as like a professional, because I just like, that's cool. I don't know much about Eastern religion.
Where does he teach?
In Japan.
Oh, wow.
I think
met him on Twitter?
Yeah. I think he's in, what's the capital city of Japan? I'm sorry.
Tokyo.
Oh, it just left me. Yeah, I think he's in Tokyo. So he is like, he's not just like a random whatever, like he's in academia. That's what he and his podcast partner are like doing. Like for me, it was the thing about Brett and Eric talking about why Brett should have won a Nobel Prize. And see, I was, because I didn't understand the pushback as to why that's not right. Like their estimations of it was wrong, and I didn't understand it, and he explained it, and then that's one of the first few episodes that they had on Decoding the Gurus, was explaining like in academia this isn't actually odd and this isn't actually mean and this isn't actually cruel what's being done here, whatever. So that's the first, within the first few episodes of that, and then I interviewed them at like when the podcast actually started talking about that. And then I interviewed them like recently, a year later, how it's going. And they've spoken to Sam Harris about their critiques of him. Like he's actually given them the time of day and gone on their podcast. They don't think he'll come back, but
so their first four podcasts were Eric and Brett Weinstein. And that was a strange episode of The Portal, where you basically have one brother sort of chastising the other brother and sort of, you know, being a supportive, encouraging big brother, and said, if the world really appreciated your genius, then, you know, you would have won the Nobel Prize, but you were robbed. And I'm not going to. But then the second one was James Lindsay, and the third one was Jordan Peterson, and this fourth one was J.P. Sears. So it's an interesting 1, 2, 3, 4. And then a bonus episode is Eric Weinstein's Feynman negative. Scott Adams, Russell Brand. So ContraPoints, Douglas Murray.
They've done like Brene Brown as well.
Okay.
It's not all people that they have access to. It's sort of like people who've gathered or garnered a following. Like what do they have? That's what they say. Like, that's what they say is their platform is, we want to, like, we're looking as to what it is about people. Sometimes it's critiquing. I would say the first Peterson episode, because they've done him since, and Joe Rogan and like people like that. But the first Peterson one was actually like not as critical as I think their later Peterson one. The first Peterson one, Chris said that he was looking at Peterson like, with someone like me, like in mind as to like, well, Andrea likes him and here's what appeals to her and people like her. Well, mostly guys, dudes, but like, you know, cause he did have a little bit more of a kinder view of him like, because I've told him why I like Peterson, and that was back then. And so that first one wasn't, it's more like, yeah, they weren't as critical. I think that they become more critical over the years, which is kind of what happens. But go on.
No, go ahead.
The reason why, because yeah, you brought it up about them, and so Peugeot has been brought under their radar. And so I've been sort of, I haven't had a problem or difficulty with who they've talked about, because they're usually quite big. But when they started talking about Jonathan, that's like, oh, that's very my
Jonathan's world. Jonathan's my boy. Back well, off. you talk about Jordan. You can talk about Brett and Eric. But when you start talking about Jonathan.
No, whoa. No. No.
Come on back here.
No, it's okay. You're Canadians really don't sound to me. That way, I guess. That. In a certain way, Paul.
Push your lips and...
Well, it's oh no. Oh no. Do I have to do some hard thinking? Well, because the initial thing is I want to be defensive, but I also know that they have a penchant for finding the weak spots that might be truly there.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
It's fair. But then I also am like, oh no, also, how is this person going to react to them? And will, how am I going to be affected? And not necessarily like as if I'm so important in it, but...
Andrew goes into mama bear mode.
See, like...
My boy, JP.
Well, are they going to be brushed off? Like, one, it's a fear of, what if they go too far and don't give him the benefit of the doubt? And, like, where I think they should. And then there's another thing.
Come under sway of the guru.
Right. But then the other side, it's... What if Jonathan just brushes them off as like nobody, which he didn't in a way, because he in that one human sacrifice video, he did say, oh, I give them the time of day because of David Fuller and blah, blah, blah. But the problem was, like, that's again, all of these things are sort of like compounding. And the latest is, I don't know that Jonathan looked to see. And because Chris brought this up, like, Chris isn't a typical bro atheist. Chris is literally his job. He studies ritual. And he doesn't just dismiss ritual as silly, modern, or like stuff from, like mumbo jumbo from the past. Like, Chris doesn't do that because he is a professor of such things and teaches such things and lives in a country where these things are taken seriously and they are practiced in life. They might not understand why, but they're practiced, which is very much something that Jonathan could be like, oh, okay, I can vibe with this. I can kind of, like, I'm sure Jonathan could have a very interesting conversation on that level if he wanted to, but I don't know that Jonathan knew that about Chris.
And
so
that's
my concern.
And that's gets very much to the point of, I think, a lot of what we've tried to do in this little corner of the internet. And I certainly, when you have high status people that you're not going to be able to build a personal relationship, in some ways you build a personal relationship with their internet avatars. And in a sense, I mean, I've certainly done a lot of that on my channel. I've got way more content out there doing that than they do. I don't think that can be questioned. Questions then arise about fairness. Does one side accurately represent the other? Now, the big difficulty with that is the frame. Because I've got more videos about Jordan Peterson than probably anybody else on the planet outside of Jordan Peterson. I might even have more videos about him than he has about himself.
Oh, yeah.
But I see him through a particular frame. And I try to be open about my frame. And I try to be fair in my evaluation within the frame. One of the things that happens very quickly, and it happened in my relationship with John Vervaeke, is I started treating some Vervaeke stuff like I'd been treating Peterson stuff. John reached out. We began to have a conversation. We began to develop a relationship. Now, bias comes in there too, because John is a very difficult guy not to like. And so then we'd be a friendship of sorts, at least via internet, hopefully in Thunder Bay. It'll grow as we meet face to face. Same with Jonathan. Friendships develop. And there's a sort of a bias too, just like you said. I mean, okay, so you were interested in Jordan. You talked about IDW stuff, Brett and Eric, but you've spoken with Jonathan. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan will, you know, return your tweets. And when you asked Jonathan for an interview, he agreed. And in fact, when, you know, some people were, you know, criticizing you, Jonathan came to your defense and said, you know, you're not silly. If you were silly, I wouldn't be talking to you. You're not silly at all. And so, mm-hmm. so for you, Jonathan is a friend. And mm-hmm. one of the things that friends do are defend their friends.
Right.
Now that there is, this is where we get into academia. We get into modernity with the monarchical vision, which imagines that I am going to evaluate this person against what? An objective, impersonal standard. And academia loves to employ that type of approach. Part of what's going away with modernity is the public acceptance of that approach in many respects. And so part of what David Fuller had questions and, you know, questioned them about, and David Fuller sort of coming at this as a journalist, is, are you just sort of trying to embody the reaction of the academy against these individuals who, and again, if you look at the list of people they've covered, they're usually people who are gaining populist power outside of the academy or outside of Blue Church. Now that isn't mm-hmm. The whole thing, because they have Ibram X. Kendi, Nassim Taleb, you know, still is in academia. They have more popular culture people like Gwyneth Paltrow, but they come back again and again. So here's Brett Weinstein and Jordan Peterson, two gargantuan intellects stare into the abyss. So they've Carl Sagan, Gad Saad, Jordan Hall. So in a lot of ways, they have spent Chris Williamson, they're keeping an eye on this little corner of the internet from the posture of the academy. Mm-hmm. And right there, you're definitely going to have tensions, especially given the type of posture that Brett is an exile from the academy. Jordan is an exile from the academy. Eric's position is that the academy is corrupt. So there's a lot going on here. And now it's...
Jonathan Peugeot's not in the academy.
No, he isn't. He's in the art world. And so should these academics... Well, you say, okay, so their expertise is ritual. And Peugeot certainly is someone who is talking about symbolism and enacted symbolism, which is ritual. So, yeah, fair enough. But they haven't done a podcast on Peugeot.
No, because they only were just made aware of him from Jonathan doing those more recent interviews.
Right. So, I am not going to say no one should be critiquing anyone else on the internet, because I've got more hours than the vast majority of humanity doing exactly that. The suspicion, again, because we don't know each other and you've gone to lengths to get to know them in more than just one conversation. And my experience is that it's helpful to have more than one conversation and to broaden the purview. And that's part of the reason, you know, with a very controversial person in my other corner of the world, which is Kristen Cobes de May. Mm. You know, she's a very controversial person because of this book. you know, my conversation with her was mostly about her biography. And I pushed back on a few little things in her book. I remember when Christopher Hitchens and Peter Hitchens did a debate in Grand Rapids. Someone set it up, and Peter Hitchens has talked about this. And Peter Hitchens basically understood that that was going to get everyone's attention because it's two brothers on two different sides of the line about God going at it. And on one hand, if Peter and Christopher wanted to make a ton of money, they could have taken that show on the road and sold it out. Peter Hitchens did it once and said, I'll never do this again. He's my brother. Mm-hmm. So I do think that part of the weakness of Twitter and part of the opportunity of YouTube is that if we can nest our critiques with each other in a frame of love, and I don't mean that romantic love, I mean phileo, brotherly love, if we can have our conversations critiquing each other within the realm of love, we will probably get better critiques. But part of what our current world of screens and tweets means is that the Dunbar number is blown apart, and we're talking to avatars and icons, and it's to really do critique, you know, fairly, generously, but I'd say powerfully, really requires expanding the frame, treating each other as human beings. And so when you wanted to talk about this whole question of accountability, call outs, this kind of thing, mm-hmm. I wanted very much to give this little speech. Now, it's also the case that nobody can hate one another like people who know each other well.
Mm-hmm. True.
And there's in some ways combinatorial explosion that goes inside relationships too. Because the more intimacy you have, which is about texture, the more intimacy you have with another person, and I don't mean that romantically or physically, in the sense that you and Mark were talking about, the more textuality you have with each other, not only is there greater possibility of phileo, of brotherly love, but there's also greater possibility of betrayal. I mean, Judas betrays Jesus, and Judas knows Jesus far better than many of Jesus' other haters in the first century Judean culture war. Mm-hmm. So and then we also have the problem that we just simply don't have enough time to, in this dispensation, in this age, to actually sit down and sufficiently know each other. So that we're stuck in these things, and then critiquing the critiquers is a very valid thing. And plenty of people in the comment section on Twitter have critiqued me, but I'm small enough that nobody is going to be able to gain liftoff in this social media world by critiquing PVK, whereas you can by much higher status people like the guys these guys are talking about.
Well, because I have had people tell me that they, you know, from the Discord group, from Bridges of Meaning, that like, oh, I saw your interview with the Decoding the Gurus guys, and it was, they're a lot nicer than they come off on Twitter. And I'm like, yeah, that's not a surprise. And that's one of the things that, I mean, I can't control other people. But I don't understand why people write the way that they do on Twitter, even though I can understand it in theory, but like in practice, I'm like, well, what are you, you're not going to get. So, and again, my goals are so different from maybe it's just the point is, I just want to say this is wrong. And so I don't care. Like, I don't care about the person that I'm saying is wrong. Everyone needs to know. I'm holding it up. They're wrong. And, like, you know, that the chips fall where they may. Maybe that's what it is. But for me, I'm like, why don't you sound, like, a little more amiable? Like, why don't you just make it a little more palatable so that you can get somewhere? Because I'm like, why are they so, maybe it's like a masculine feminine thing, but I'm like, why are you so much better with me than like when you're typing furiously?
That's what can't all the children play nice.
That's how it feels. And I just don't understand why they don't want to sound better. Sound better. What am I meaning? Not better. Sound a little bit more benefit of the doubt. Like, why don't they want to sound like they're giving that a bit more in order to... Like, David Fuller does that, I think, you know? I'm like, you do that, but you don't even do that much on Twitter because you're not even doing that on Twitter. So
right. I don't think Twitter is a good platform for that. I think just by virtue with the heavy constraints that you have on Twitter, it's a good platform for some things. It's not a good platform for other things. And figuring out what platforms are good for. And again, there's a telos in this that I think you are participating in, which is you want there to be a community of love, a supportive, productive community of love. And you believe that if there is brotherly love in a community, the conversations will be more productive. Now, you can ask productive in what sense? Productive in the sense of if Decoding the Gurus has a valid criticism of Jordan Peterson, potentially Jordan Peterson could hear the criticism, understand its validity, and maybe change. And in that way, there's sort of a communal journey towards the good and the right and the beautiful and the true. That's the vision.
Well,
and it's a good vision.
Well, it seems like the idea of, like, what does it mean to be accused on Twitter? Like, that's what it is. Like, what does it mean? Does it mean this person bad? Or does it mean, oh, there's maybe something that could be tweaked here? And it's usually the former. Yeah. Like, at least in broad strokes, that's what it is.
Right. And so I think it's helpful to think about this whole question of combinatorial explosiveness and the reality that we have to greatly reduce the world in order to engage with it. I've got 10 videos I was thinking about for every one that gets produced, which I know would shock people given the number of videos I do produce. But I was watching, for example, Esther O'Reilly go after Tim Keller on Twitter. And I watch people do that, let's say, with David French. And this is where you get into this question of, okay, if people only know each other better, then they maybe will be kinder or nicer. No, not necessarily, because basically David French and Tim Keller are members in the Presbyterian Church of America that doesn't allow women in ecclesiastical office. I mean, in terms of a number of boundary markers, they're a deeply conservative denomination. And other conservatives are basically going after Keller and French as sellouts. Now, the difficulty with combinatorial explosiveness is what, and you know,
what does that mean? Can you just give a definition of what exactly that means?
Combinatorial explosiveness means that there are almost always different aspects or frames through which you can see a person or even a conflict or a situation, or even it's the point that Peugeot likes to make about objects. So this is a lens cap for the lens I'm using right now. And now when I just said this is a lens cap, I have located this object within a vast universe, and I have simplified it down to one fairly functional thing, which is I can put this on my lens and then I protect the lens when I move it around for the various things. But this can also be a coaster. So if I've got, you know, a cold drink and I don't want it to put a ring on my table, I can put my cold drink on this. So this is a lens cap or a coaster. This can also be, let's say, a shim. Let's say if there was something hot in the room that I had to flick, or let's say there was a spider I wanted to kill and I didn't want to kill it with my finger, I could squish the spider with this little thing, and now suddenly it's a spider killer, or it's a coaster, or it's a lens cap, or it's, well, now we're going to see it. Well, this is made of plastic, and maybe this plastic is, this is a piece of waste that is going to plague the earth for the next 10,000 years because it won't easily biodegrade. And I can't recycle it because there's this little spring in here which is made of metal. And so now this is a contamination that plagues the planet, and maybe some sea creature could swallow it, and in fact the entire species could go extinct because of this. Is a killer. So that's combinatorial explosiveness. Says there's a near infinite number of ways to imagine even something. Let's see if I can get the camera to.
Yeah, there you go. Oh,
So anyway, to get the there's near infinite number of things that this can be. That's combinatorial explosiveness. Now, when people critique, let's say Tim Keller. Tim Keller is a planted a megachurch of conservative evangelicals in New York City. Wow. Tim Keller was raised, there's a video out there on Tim Keller that kind of goes through and see. Tim Keller has been flirting with Marxism since he was in college. Tim Keller is a turncoat against America and everything good it stands for. Tim Keller is a father. Tim Keller is a man. Tim Keller has size 12 shoes. Tim Keller, when I met him, I thought, wow, he's taller than he looks on YouTube. So he's about the same height as I am. And that surprised me. Tim Keller speaks about social justice. That was part of the things in his church. So there's near infinite number of things that you can talk about Tim Keller. Tim Keller's got a huge body of work out there. He's written a number of books. There's lots of ways that you can discuss Tim Keller. Now, when Esther O'Reilly or others go after Tim Keller, they are going after him for very specific things. And that's part of how we get to higher resolution with each other. So you could talk about Andrea with the bangs. So, well, even by the name Andrea with the bangs, hey, guess what? She has bangs. PVK has none. And Andrea, what does, and, you know, even if I would say, okay, Andrea, what is Twitter for? You can think about that. And then I would say, why do you use Twitter? There's probably multiple reasons, only some of which you are conscious of, that go into the answer for that question. And so then we get to this question. Okay. What is a YouTube channel for? What is a podcast for? And decoding the gurus. Okay, I do a lot of that on my channel. I do a ton of decoding. In some ways, that's one of the biggest things I do on my channel. My most popular videos are decoding videos. Jordan Peterson says this. What on earth does that mean? I take a frame, which is sort of my Dutch Calvinism and the quirky person that I am, and I sort of try to break it down and help people see it and contextualize it in their world. If they had named their podcast Debunking the Gurus, well, and then I think part of the question is, and I can't weigh into this because, like I said, I've never listened to a single entire episode. I've listened to little bits of some of them. Are they decoding or debunking? But those two words conjure up hugely different worlds. And I think at least some of the criticism I've heard has been, well, maybe you should have named it debunking instead of decoding, but I can't make that judgment because that wouldn't be fair. But decoding very much is situated within a modernist monarchical vision perspective that says, here is objectivity. And, you know, what's happening is decoding the gurus. Now, the combination of those two words, a guru, that conjures up, well, Indian religion has gurus, and these are holy men. And so it almost makes it sound like there's some sort of a a scam, or Jordan Peterson is a grifter, which is a common thing that people want to say about him, at least as critics. And so, okay, well, what exactly is this going to be? Is, if I listen to their episodes about Jordan Peterson, will people be more appreciative of Jordan Peterson? Will they just simply understand Jordan Peterson a little better? Or will they, maybe if they were going to be fans of Jordan Peterson, now shrink back? And so there's a lot going on here. And one of the things that I hope we can talk about is the question of the journalism or the interview, and especially, let's say, the difference between Dave Rubin and David Fuller, because that tension in there is important. Because, again, I think the assumed frame you bring to Twitter and to these guys is, hey, let's do this, let's have these conversations in a context of love. Let's have them cooperatively, appreciatively, so that we can all discover the truth together. And I think it's a great frame. It's a frame I very much enjoy and want to pursue, but it's not a frame that itself is beyond critique or even criticism.
So you wanted to bring up the difference between Dave Rubin and David Fuller.
The conflict between them.
Do you mean like holding these up as examples of like, here, this guy runs his like this, and or you mean
no, the criticism of David Rubin engaged by David Fuller, far broader criticism against Dave Rubin that many, even, I mean, you'll find plenty of Bridgers who will.
I talked to David Fuller, you know, about this.
Yeah. So yeah. Your channel's been on the hunt here, Andrea. Your channel is insufficiently appreciated.
Oh, well, that's very kind of you, Paul.
But my assumption is, and correct me if I'm wrong, part of the spirit of Decoding the Gurus is within the tradition of journalism within which David Fuller stands in his critique and criticism of Dave Rubin.
Uh-huh.
That Dave Rubin's job as a journalist should be to be impartial and to, this is a similar criticism sometimes Joe Rogan gets, that he's too easy on bad actors.
Yeah. Yeah.
And okay, so there's an ought that's buried into there. Mm-hmm. And that ought is very much a part of the tradition of journalism that David Fuller is working out of. And part of the criticism of Dave Rubin is that he brings in mostly people he agrees with, mm-hmm. and it's a and someone might level that same criticism at my conversation with Kristen Dumais. I should have gone after her.
Okay, that's actually what I wanted to... I do want to actually specifically ask you about this, because that's one of the things... So I wrote Chris and Matt, the Gurus guys, in the midst of one of these initial things with Jonathan, and bringing up some things, because I didn't want to participate out there in the Twitter land, but I just had a few like, hey, like this, you know, and brought up a few concerns that, me being someone who's like, I know Jonathan and I've interviewed him, so blah, blah, blah. And the concern that Chris brought up is like, can you not bring up, we'll call it like the elephant in the room, whatever that is. Like, I don't remember exactly what Chris said, but like the concerning behavior that has been witnessed on social media, for example, like, can you not bring that up within 3 hours of a 3-hour conversation, blah, blah, blah. And it could have been regarding James Lindsay or regarding Brett. Now, I've spoken with James Lindsay, but the thing, like the latest one I've done with him, which was last year sometime, I only talked about the elephant in the room with him, which was his behavior on Twitter. So I guess I'm allowed to stay in the, you're okay, Andrea, still, because I, you know, I got a lot of flack from his fans. That's for sure. But I mean, but Jim and I are still friends. I'm actually friends with his wife. Anyways, so that went well. Like, that's good, you know. But say for Jonathan, what if I want to talk with him again? Again, I don't have anything right now, but in the future, what if I don't bring up the concerning behavior with Jonathan? Like, and but like, I know I'm saying it kind of like casually, but I am legitimately like, but what if I want to talk about symbolism with Jonathan and I don't want anything to do with what's going on in modern things that are being addressed, like, you know, COVID stuff and travel and restrictions. Like, that was a little bit of stuff that was, that Jonathan has talked about in live streams, or who he's decided to talk to. There are some things I could say in a non-combative way that would be fine, I think, but I just am like, well, where am I? See, this is the modern journalism thing. This is the, well, am I obligated when I want to talk about something with Jonathan and I want it to be specifically, I'm like, I'm concerned about symbolism of whatever. Do I need to bring up things that were concerning that maybe happened in previous discussions he had on other people's channels? Is that an obligation that I have? And so that's sort of like, I'm not living in modern journalism. I have done that a little bit sometimes because I have been like, I am wondering about this, so I'm going to ask so-and-so about this. And it's gone usually pretty well for me. But at the same time, am I obligated to do that? And you know, to whom am I obligated? The audience? Maybe because there's so many yes men regarding like the gurus that they're talking about, that's why they think it's needed to be brought up. But what do you think about it?
We now have this game where Jonathan Peugeot is talking. We have concerns about Jonathan Peugeot. Oh, who's we? And what exactly are these concerns? And this is a classic human trick. Let's say you're in high school and everybody knows there's the cool kids and the girls and the boys, the cool girls and the cool boys, they sort of play different games. But let's say the cool girls, and let's say you're a tweener. Let's say you're not part of the cool girls. You're not part of the, you know, the nerdy girls or the girls who just socially don't have their act together or any of that. You're a tweener.
Which means how did you know, Paul? That was me in high school.
Really? I'm so surprised. So you wander over to the cool girls and you did something that is definitely not cool in cool girl orthodoxy. And they say, Andrea, we have some concerns. Mm-hmm. Oh, you know, and right away that evokes an entire landscape. And what's amazing about the trick of that move is the concerns are just sort of smuggled in, and they're definitely socially constructed. Now, what I'm doing right now is just a classic postmodern move. The concerns are there to keep this little clique of cool girls in power. And now there are abundant movies about some rebel girl who comes and breaks up the cool girls' clique and radicalizes it and brings everyone together and, you know, all that stuff. So we all know that this happens. But we've got this massive game going on in our world where we've got some concerns about Jonathan Peugeot. Oh, really? Do you? Well, tell me about those concerns. And part of the game is to leave the concerns themselves unexamined, because it's basically a social game. And immediately the concerns themselves can be examined, the game falls apart. And I know this very well because churches play this move all the time. Churches, in fact, especially Protestant confessional churches, but I've seen Catholics and Orthodox do it just the same. You know, well, let's talk about John MacArthur. We're going to talk about John MacArthur from the context of, let's say, a slightly progressive Christian Reformed church. Well, we've got concerns. Oh, have we? And, you know, I've got plenty of concerns myself about John MacArthur. But it's sort of a social bullying in that we all know all of these things about COVID and vaccines. And I'm a guy, I'm about as vaxxed up as you can get. I'm very much a tweener too. And I'll hang out with, it's just because I hang out with all sorts of people anyway, but
oh, at some Paul, point, you're the cool kid. Come on. You're like, oh, Andrea, how little do you know?
Oh, Andrea, how little do you know? This is a game that is nearly up. And part of what happens, though, is you get, and I think David Fuller has really worked hard, and it's part of the reason I appreciate David. I know not everybody does. Part of the reason I appreciate David is that he's worked really hard to recognize that very quickly you have thesis and then you have antithesis. So COVID thesis, COVID antithesis, and very quickly the antithesis crowd is playing the exact same game as the thesis crowd. So we have concerns about Tim Keller. Oh, okay. Just like we have concerns about Bart Ehrman. Oh, okay. And okay, you have concerns. Fine. Who's we? And you're gaining a certain power in, and this is what's so ironic about so much of this postmodernity, all their critique of power, well, that they're using power just like everyone else's, which is something that Peterson's been pointing out all the way along. We have concerns. Gosh, what a power move that is. That, you know, so Jonathan Peugeot's, tell him as he's driving to Thunder Bay, you know, about the cost of deciding not to get vaccinated. You know, as he has to drive across the vast Canadian tundra on apparently roads that aren't always so great. My resolution of Canada has been increasing over the last 4 years. So then you get into this question that David Fuller, I think, rightly asks. So let's say someone like Dave Rubin. There's an objectivity game that is built into modern journalism that is leveraged upon a confessional body of knowledge. And you could call it thesis in terms of COVID. You could call it blue church. You could call it all of these things. And this stuff has tremendous power. I was talking to some people that I know very well. And in many respects, these people should be, let's say, celebrating the imminent demise of Roe v. Wade in America, but they are, it's so funny because if I had asked them ostensibly, are they pro-life or pro-choice, they would probably say that they're pro-life, but then Roe v. Wade is going away. And it's, to me, it's part and parcel of this question that they have been deeply formed by the community that they are in. And the community that they are in is very much blue church. And even if the actual church they go to has stuff on paper that's in conflict with blue church seems to be winning. Mm-hmm. And now we have red culture, or, you know, so this is all getting complex. And so to one degree or another, we all have to figure out, okay, you're going to have the Decoding the Gurus guys on, or you're going to have James Lindsay on. Are you going to go after him? And I think the question is, No, I'm going to bring in the fact that Kristen Cobez de May is a part of the Christian Reformed Church. Do I have disagreements with her? Absolutely. Can she and I talk about them? Absolutely. But before perhaps we talk about them, I want to set a table of love. And I want to set a table of exactly what you've been describing as, let's have an atmosphere of love. And again, mutual respect, good faith, because we believe that actually in a context like this, our disagreements will be more productive if we can sort of take out a lot of the social dynamics, which is cool girls versus nerds or something like that. And so in each different conversation, I think, as again, you had a relationship with James Lindsay's wife. So you're not going to, you know, kneecap him or, you know, cheap shot him or, you know, any of those things. And, you know, part of the reason Jordan Peterson climbed to so much prominence was that when what's her head on BBC Four was, you know, trying to kneecap Jordan Peterson. So you're saying women are evil and you long for their complete demise, yeah. Kathy Newman. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that men and women are different. And the weirdness of our cultural moment is that on one hand, you can't say men and women are different and have, you know, certain groups just cast scorn on you. On the other hand, if you say women are better than men, which gets applauded, but the statement itself assumes men and women are different, that there are two classes of category. And people are watching this, and even if they can't articulate it, they say, something isn't right with any of this. Can we talk about it? No. If you talk about it, we'll have concerns about you too.
Okay. Okay, but Paul, the very thing that David Fuller had regarding Dave Rubin was he had concerns about his...
Yes.
The way that he interviewed people.
That's right.
And they seemed valid.
Yes.
Gave me the whole spiel about concerns.
Well, no, but concerns itself isn't wrong. I've got many concerns, but at some point I have to own my concerns, and when asked, should be able to demonstrate my value system and where those concerns come from. So for David Fuller, as someone who has a history in professional journalism, he leverages that school. And he says, this is how a professional journalist should act. Now, the question is, what exactly are we doing on YouTube? And Dave Fuller will actually go into the question of, what exactly am I doing on YouTube? And have that conversation. Dave Rubin? I don't know. Dave Rubin just increasingly seems to be much more of someone who is more like, I'm not going to say a propagandist, I'm going to say a preacher. Or someone who is pursuing a religious cause. Now, I think people on the left are also pursuing a religious cause, and I think modernism itself is also a church. So everyone's got a religious cause, but this is part of the weirdness of this moment that David Fuller will continue to maintain some relationship with modernity. But he then will explicate what those concerns are. And what I think he then finally should do is, and I think he tried to do this, I don't know how clear it was, but to say basically, Dave Rubin is not really a journalist in terms of this tradition. Dave Rubin is much more of a someone who is he's more like a pastor or a preacher. He is someone who is trying to form his congregation into a worldview and a way of being and knowing and acting.
Okay, so that brings me to that's something that has been brought up that I've seen people saying on Twitter, how the way that people do interviews on YouTube it is sort of this, oh, you've got to be buddies and friendly. And I think that the idea is like Joe Rogan sort of set that tone. And again, not to say that Joe Rogan doesn't push people on things at times, but I haven't watched him in a while, so I don't know. But I think that, you know, I know that he's not a shrinking violet or anything from conflict necessarily, but I do agree that it is sort of the tradition, it's a new tradition. Is that an oxymoron? I don't know. But it feels like a new tradition of YouTube interviews are friendlier than the old school of journalism, of what you're describing.
Yes.
So and that might be a little bit of what, and I can't speak for them, but what the Decoding the Gurus guys might be sort of like going after a little bit too.
Yes.
Well, concerned about.
So that's, and this is part of what we're trying to suss out in terms of this new media. So you and I are friends of sorts.
Of sorts.
I mean, we've never met personally. Yeah. I mean, you've sent me lovely Christmas cards with your husband and your sons, and it's, you know, this is something that friends do, and it's a lovely thing. I don't tend to send Christmas cards, but
that's okay. I don't expect them back, especially from the dudes.
But what is true of us in this conversation? We want the relationship to continue. We want to remain friends. And so there are biases that come in here quite fairly that we might pull punches with each other because we want another conversation. We want the relationship to continue. We want to, in the process of the conversation, we continue to act in a way to communicate to each other that we're talking in good faith, and yet the goal of this conversation is more conversations. It's mm-hmm. a context of brotherly love. That's what we're looking for in this. So Joe Rogan, you know, starts his channel, and he explains this again and again. I wanted to talk to some people I was interested in. And that sort of assumes some of that. Now, journalism, certain schools of journalism say, well, that's, again, back to modernity, that's biased. And so PVK and Andrew with the Bangs are going to have a very biased conversation. And we're not going to try to undercut each other or embarrass each other or make each other look bad. We're not going to do that. Now, there's a bias there. Now, there is value in adversarial interviews. And that in some ways is what, when David Fuller is critiquing Dave Rubin, that is the tradition that David Fuller is pointing to. And so when David Fuller has the Decoding the Gurus guys on his channel, at times he will often switch back and forth, and that's not uncommon. You begin, you know, Jordan Peterson said when he met Kathy Newman in the green room, she was a perfectly nice person. But when they came out onto the set, this is where you can get into more spiritual language, a new spirit inhabited her, and she became a different person. I, as a pastor, play, you know, a new thing. This PVK as a pastor, PVK as a friend, PVK as a father, PVK as a husband. I've got all those things. A new spirit comes upon me, and I act in a different role. I act from a different office. The tradition, especially, and David Fuller talks about this quite a bit, in the UK is much more adversarial journalism. We certainly have a fair amount of that in the US as well. And it certainly has its role, and it's fine. But now, everyone understands if you're on ABC, NBC, CNN, Fox, there's an expectation of professional journalism that has that degree of adversariality. On YouTube, now I don't go out and seek a lot of conversations with high status people. I part of it because high status people are giving me plenty of content that I can interact with already. I don't need to. And plus, the time to create a relationship with this high status person is important on YouTube because, you know, Times of London calls Jordan Peterson when he gets back from his, you know, his medical leave, let's call it. and wants to talk to him about it. Times of London, that principality, wants to talk to Jordan Peterson in the form of a reporter. So the reporter talks to the publicist, talks to Jordan a little bit, and Michaela, and says, yeah, I just, you know, it's going to be a friendly interview, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So is it the woman that's interviewing, or is it Times of London that is going to show up and do the interview? And as it turned out, it was the Times of London, not this nice woman that had chatted up before. Now, Jordan and Michaela felt betrayed. Why? Because the question was, which is going to show up? And Jordan does very few interviews with New York Times, Times of London, these entities, these principalities, because they are by nature adversarial. And that's absolutely fine. But here in YouTube land, let's say I want to talk to Jordan Peterson. And so I get in contact with his people and say, I want to talk to Jordan. And now they have to figure out, well, what is this Paul Vanderclay? Is he adversarial? Well, I've certainly critiqued Jordan and some of his ideas. Is he friendly? Oh, I've also seemed to very much promote him, and I seem to be a fan. So which Paul Vanderclay will show up? Well, a lot of it probably depending on if I want more than one conversation with Jordan Peterson. So when he talks to John Vervaeke, he begins as a colleague. When he talks to Jonathan Peugeot, he begins as a friend. So these YouTube conversations, well, what are we doing? We don't know. Joe Rogan starts with talking to friends, and as the podcast grows, his reach grows, and it's like, I'd like to talk to Elon Musk. I might even like to be friends with Elon Musk. I'm not going to go in there and be a jerk to Elon, because and Babylon B, Elon Musk says yes to their interview. They're going to, you know, it's going to be a soft, friendly interview, because the thing they are pursuing is probably relationship, motivated by all sorts of things. So it's a very open question what we're doing here on YouTube. And when I say it's an open question, I mean, for us as a society, these implicit rituals, because these guys are experts on rituals. What we're doing here is full of ritual. And it's probably ritual in terms of creating community. And that's different from, let's say, an adversarial model that attempts to have iron sharpening iron. And I think a lot of what we're trying to do in this little corner of the internet is to so everybody knows that myself and John Vervaeke, I'm a Christian minister, he's a non-theist, Neoplatonism, a revived Neoplatonism, Dutch Calvinism. We have a lot of differences between us. But in our conversation, we very much want to communicate friendship. But also, let's test some of these issues. And so we have rituals and dances by which we do that. Now, there are plenty of people out there who will say, Paul Vanderclay isn't challenging John Vervaeke on the issues that matter. Oh, so you have concerns. Okay. Do you understand what John and I are doing? And the truth is, as in the last conversation I had with John Vervaeke, neither of us know what we're doing. And we know we don't know what we're doing, but we're sort of figuring it out as we go. And that gets blown even larger with these Decoding the Gurus guys, because I don't think any of us know what's happening with YouTube. It's way too young. It's way too early. And the fact that Jordan Peterson just passed 5 million subscribers and has enormous social cultural influence that the traditional gatekeepers, which were these other principalities and institutions, cannot contain.
But that's where the question of I think people like the gurus and others, what sort of a responsibility that the old gatekeepers have checks. Well, we like to we'll say checks that are known, checks and balances that might be known, potentially journalists, you know, old media and such, backers, you know, or whatever. But the new influencers, I guess you could say, like public influencers, they don't have those as much. And what responsibility do they have? And that's where the, oh, so this, the concerns, if you have the chance, should be made known.
Those who share concerns should probably, when asked, be willing to say, to account for their concerns and not play this little cool girl's click of, we're concerned. Oh, you mean you're going to kick me out of the club?
So it's like, why? Well, why are you concerned? It's like, well, this might lead to this, and this could lead to this. And therefore that's why I'm wondering. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Okay. I see what you're saying. Cause part of me is like, when I was watching all this play out on Twitter, I probably wouldn't even have worked out, but part of me was like, maybe I could get, it was mostly Chris out of the two guys from the Gurus. Maybe I could get Chris and Jonathan and like host a talk with them. Yeah. But that was a very small part of me.
Right.
And then the more ambitious part, but then the most of me was like, I don't want to do that. That's way too scary. And I want Jonathan to still like me after.
That's right.
Chris knows. Like, I'm not worried about him as much. Because I'm like, yeah, he gets these, whatever. But, like, for Jonathan, Jonathan is someone who I don't know why he still says yes to me to go on my channel. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm more friends with Chris, to be honest. And with Jonathan, I'm like, oh, thanks for saying yes. We have a interviewee friendship, but it isn't because he's just big. He's just big. Like, I'm one of the people on his Facebook.
He's achieved guru status.
Slightly, yeah. And so that's the. I'm super honest about that. Like that. That's why I'm like I am afraid to.
No.
Partially because I'm not sure I'm the right person
to get him on the channel.
Sorry, what was it?
You'd be cashing in chips to get him on the channel.
Right, and will he ever come again?
Exactly. And that's, again, this is the YouTube thing. And so something like the New York Times, when the New York Times calls you, in some ways, especially initially, and I think this is probably a lesson Jordan Peterson learned, when they first call you, you say yes, because they're the New York Times. Now maybe you say no because they're in the New York Times, but that shows how much the world has changed, because there have been a lot of people who you couldn't say no to.
Well, and the other one is I was sort of hoping that David Fuller would ask the two of them on, which I think he did, and I don't know if any of it. Because I figured that he would be able to handle it better than me.
Yeah, David would do an excellent job with it, I think.
Oh, wow, thanks. Dave, appreciate that. He would be definitely way better suited than you, Andrea. No, he's more experienced. He's more experienced in such things. I'm sorry I trapped you there.
I feel kneecapped. I'm not talking to you anymore. You know, you've had better access to PBK than anybody else. No more.
Why am I not treating you with respect?
I'm cutting you off, Andrea.
But it's more, no, it's more that I am afraid, and I don't think that's a good space for me to be asking these two. I'd have to get to a different place. David's in that place where I think
there's a lot of status going on in this. And this is part of the weakness of ardent, assumptive egalitarians, because they want to say, status doesn't matter. It's full of crap. People are deeply interested in status, and rightfully so, and your concerns are absolutely valid.
But I'm afraid I wouldn't have the right... Actually, that's another thing, is I don't know that I would have the right questions to get everything out that should be out, like that I'm concerned about.
I totally agree with you, Andrea, and because there are many, I can think of, let's say, two people that would be potentially in conflict that maybe I could bring on my channel, and I would not feel I'd have all of those same pauses that you have. Partly because, and not, actually, I would probably try to think of someone else who could be a better intermediary. Mm. And again, part of why I really appreciate Dave Fuller is because I have heard him talk about so many of these types of concerns at a high enough resolution that I believe he understands what's at play. And part of that is, again, because of his background as a professional journalist.
Yeah. I'm just a mom.
And I'm just a pastor. And we all have areas of expertise. Now, the questions that are at play between, and we also both know that having Peugeot and Chris Kavanaugh would be one level of thing, or it's, let's say, having Jordan Peterson and Chris Kavanaugh would be another. But then we have to go back to the medium, because doing this on YouTube is different from doing this on television. And there are lots of differences involved in that. And so this is partly why the sort of setup. So one of the conversations that is really interesting to me of what it did was this new channel about debate channel got me and Vaush on, and Vaush and I had a lovely conversation. And part of that is because of, and before this thing, another YouTuber contacted me and said, don't do this. You know, Vaush is going to, kneecap you, and it's just going to be a big mess. And I think the person was looking out for me, and, okay, fair enough. But I did it, and we had a lovely conversation. And it was debating, something fairly vague, basically like, is the world better or not because Jordan Peterson is in it, as if either of us have anything to do with that. So there's so many layers in all of this stuff. And okay, so what's the goal? To have Chris Kavanaugh and Jonathan Peugeot be nicey-nicey?
No, it's to see better, to see a better, what was the word? Like a better frame, like more of the frames that they've missed.
Right. To see the landscape between them and maybe to know each of them better. Now, and I think partly, I would guess part of your motivation would be, okay, so the difference between them gets mapped on inside of you, and there's discord in you. Yes. You're friends with Chris, you're friends with Jonathan. So you like both of these individuals, and you'd love it. This is not a bad thing. You'd love it that they would see each other better, and because their relationship, because even though they don't have one, because they're both mapped onto your heart, you've got dissonance inside of you that you would like to resolve. Mm-hmm. And maybe if they had a conversation, they'd resolve it. Right. So maybe I'll get Hank Cruz and Kristen Cobez de May, because Hank, sends tweets at me about her. And maybe Hank Cruz and Kristen Cobez de May can see eye to eye. Now, so I'm part of a little community. CRC Voice has been part of that community for 25 years, a little online listserv. And there are longstanding sort of feuds in that community. One between, I'm not going to name names, one between the woman who actually founded the group back when listservs and email were new, and she has a particular political religious perspective. Mm-hmm. Others in the group have a very different religious and political perspective. But every now and then we have what we call Voices Anonymous, which basically means an in-person meeting, like CRC Synod or things like that. And so she was living in Iowa at the time, and myself and her and others from the group who on the listserv can go back and forth like cats and dogs. When we all sit together in her round her kitchen table in Iowa, we're all deep, close friends in some ways. We have huge differences between us, but at that table, we can be together. And that then gets into the question is, which I think is true, if we can be at a table together, can in fact our disagreements be more productive? Because it's less likely that I will straw man my adversary, right? Because I have in myself a disposition for their well-being. But that also sets up the dynamics of betrayal. Right. So, we're elevating the situation. And so you want good things in your heart for both of them. And so your desire is good. And even your impulse to say, well, maybe if David Fuller would do it, it would be better, is a realistic impulse, because you know David Fuller is better at some things than you are.
Well, now, he had that professional background, yeah. And I don't think he's as worried about being liked as I am. So,
well, but I think if let's say you're, instead of doing this on YouTube, which is a much more television journalistic like thing, maybe you found out that Jonathan Peugeot and Chris Kavanaugh were both in your town at the same time. Maybe you would invite them both over for lunch. And they'd, you know, and your kids would be running, or your boys would be running around, and they'd meet your husband. And then suddenly they're not talking about Chris Kavanaugh's concerns about Jonathan Peugeot and COVID. Well, maybe Chris Kavanaugh would said, well, I'm not going to sit across the lunch table from someone who is unvaccinated. Oh, okay. Or maybe Chris Kavanaugh would, concerns be damned, he's going to sit across the table from Jonathan Peugeot, who is unvaccinated, and you've let unvaccinated Jonathan Peugeot into your home and exposing your children to his unvaccinated breath. And of course, boys being boys, they're going to do things. And maybe Chris Kavanaugh and Jonathan Peugeot are going to watch one of your sons do something and have a moment of bonding at that point, where they connect not over COVID or politics or orthodoxy or symbolism or ritual, any of those things, but just the beauty and being of a young boy doing what he does around the lunch table when there are two strangers in the home. Mm-hmm. And there's a connection.
Okay. No, I see what you're setting up, like that this is what the theme of what you've been going back to is the, like, in looking for community set up with a frame of love. And I just, you're right, that Twitter isn't the spot that encourages.
Because your boys don't belong on Twitter, and people can have all the concerns they want about Jonathan Peugeot's unvaccinated breath, but they're not going to get the cooties through Twitter. So, you know, and that's, again, why, on the one hand, we don't know what all of these social networks are doing to us or for us, mm-hmm. and what we can do with them. Mm-hmm. But that's also part of the reason why just meeting in person is so powerful and so important. Mm-hmm. For the, you know, again, Peugeot and Chris Kavanaugh live inside of you on your map.
Right.
And what you want in your map is love. We all want that. Mm-hmm. It's very complex. Sometimes we want adversarial things and we love that, you know, but that's the longing that you have is reconciliation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is what it is.
That is. Oh, and that's, wow, a beautiful thing.
Yes. It's something that I think is hard to accept, that that might not happen soon or ever, but it is, and it's okay to be there. I think that's the thing that I've learned the most from your teachings and your videos, is that sometimes, and you never even said this directly, but like, it's okay to be disgruntled a little, yeah, inside. Yeah. And then that's okay.
Yeah.
Cause then maybe you'll be like spurred to,
yeah,
look at this or that in a different way, or like it, but that's okay. It's okay to have a little bit of a discongruent.
Yeah.
Speaking of, actually, Paul, I wasn't thinking of bringing this up, but since you sort of like jokingly brought it up without knowing. So like, there was a time, maybe last month, no, maybe in March, I was kind of like mad at you a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know if I would say mad, but disgruntled with you a little bit.
Okay. Well, let's hear it. Absolutely. Okay.
It's coming out, everyone. It's coming out. No. So the fighting and the conflict in Ukraine came out.
Yeah.
And all that was happening. And there were sort of different cultural reactions.
Yeah.
And you seemed frustrated and in one sort of space, and I didn't understand it at all. because I mean, I understood it a little, but to me it seemed a little bit the way what you were frustrated about the way that people act as if they're the ones going to war and like, getting their guns and getting like defending the Ukrainian people as if like, as if putting the like putting a flag on their house or something or in their name, like which I have had and I still have. As if that's like look at the difference I made. The what is it? Virtue signaling, I guess. You were sort of like pushing back against that. And I was like, what the heck? Why can't we support Ukrainians? So yeah, like I was sort of like, but it seemed, but you have a little, see, you have a sarcastic bite that I don't see online as much. And you really pulled that out during that time. And I didn't really know how to take it or understand it. And it just sounded like off the cuff, sort of flippant. But I did actually ask you about, I don't know if you remember, I asked you about
I
certain
do.
things. Okay, and I got to the bottom of it basically of like after asking you about it, but just on Twitter, somehow it didn't get corrupted through the platform of Twitter, but you explained why you said whatever it was, and it wasn't just one thing, but the one thing was the thing I decided to ask you about, and then you explained it, and I was like, okay, fair enough, but it was angsty for me a little bit with you.
Your little PVK map and your little Ukraine map had dissonance in, and no, fair enough. I mean, we have these kinds of conflicts all the time, and part of what the expansion of our powers through Twitter, through flags, through news. Part of what that means is that there are more and more opportunities for these kinds of conflicts. And, let's say, how does one feel about the fact that Roe v. Wade may, be overturned, whatever that means in terms of all the detail that legal things have? Which side of that are you on? And, okay, so Ukraine is getting, the crap beat out of them. Well, now they're doing pretty good. They're doing pretty good in the war. But at the same time, I mean, when it comes to the cost of the war, it's really difficult. And so then we find ourselves on other sides of divides. And this very much ties into what we were talking about with respect to what we're doing in YouTube conversations. Do I tell Kristen DeMay that I was, when I first heard about the title, and I didn't really know much of anything about her, but a mutual friend of ours had said that she was writing this book and this was the title, and she had been looking into Jordan Peterson a little bit in terms of the book. And of course, this is a mutual friend of ours. And so he said, well, I know a CRC minister who's actually done a lot with Jordan Peterson. And but, she only mentioned him twice, not terribly generously in the book. But so me and Kristen Cobez de May have differences of opinions on some things. How do we live with that? That's not a small thing. At the same time, I can think about myself and my wife. Myself and my wife have differences of opinions on all sorts of things. Yet we remain married and husband and wife and parents of children and living together and sleeping together in a home, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, that's all of this challenge of love, because I remember one of the, I mean, Peugeot is so prone to come out with definitions of things that when you first, I remember I first heard him define love and I thought, what? you know, now after listening to him for years, I can appreciate the definition of love, which is in some ways being kind and generous to the other. And it's embracing someone who has difference from you. And so you decide to put a little Ukrainian flag on your Twitter bio. And, you know, someone might have concerns about PVK because he has not put the Ukrainian flag on his Twitter bio. I mean, if you watch American politics for a while, there was this whole issue about flag pins. You know, all the Republicans seem to have flag pins, but you don't have a, are you really patriotic? I mean, it's all about the flag pin, or presidents saying, God bless you. President said, God bless you. He must be a man of God. We have a Christian nation, blah, 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 blah. Or, you know, he said, God bless you, but he doesn't really mean it. Cause what is God? I mean, you can go forever on these things. And so, you know, friendship, and you know this in terms of all the various levels of love, agape, phileo, eros, storge, all of these things, you know, especially in, let's say, a husband and a wife, enormous differences, hard differences, yet also strong bonds. And so this is what I was talking about in terms of we come together and we have a conversation and it's like, well, we're going to play nicey-nicey and we're going to reassure each other that this is in good faith and we like each other and we'll have another conversation and the relationship will continue. Ah, but be a little careful with relationships, because the more intimacy, the more potential for disagreement. And Paul might just say, you know, I see these people with their Ukrainian flags and I think, oh. And you like, well, what does Paul think about me? I have a Ukrainian flag. I'm pissed as hell about Russia's doing to Ukraine and I want to show them my support and I think we should have a no-fly zone and, you know. And so, okay. So, and then of course, what do you do with it? Well, you know, in a married couple, maybe first you have a little fight and then maybe you have a little silence and then you realize that, well, this isn't going anywhere. So then maybe you have another little talk and you have a reparative talk and okay. Mom will have the Ukrainian flag on her Twitter bio and dad won't. Mom doesn't want the boys to drive motorcycles, but dad says, okay. And well, in the context of a marriage, you negotiate. That's all what we do. So it's okay to, but again, here it's the weirdness of this world because you can, you know, and I have this as a preacher. It's accentuated on YouTube. Someone finds my channel and I say a few things and people are like, oh, PVK is the YouTuber I've been looking for. I'm going to watch his videos. Oh, he's got so many of them, blah, 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 blah. And then they bump into one video where I say something and it's like, you voted for Barack Obama? Unsubscribe. PVK.
How dare you?
And, you know, in this crazy world, I may never know who they are in real life. You know, here, you know, we're doing these things in church. You have this in churches all the time. Things are going fine. And suddenly someone misses a worship service. Oh, maybe they were sick. They missed two worship services. Oh, maybe they're out of town. Missed three worship services.
Maybe you said something.
I probably did. And now, you know, they're leaving the church or they're kind of have a church brownout. You could really do this during COVID where we're just going to watch the live stream. Okay. That way we don't have to go into the room and have the question, do I look Paul in the eye? If Paul approaches me and reaches out his hand, do I shake his hand? If he says, how am I doing? Am I going to say, I'm mad at you because of X, Y, Z? Oh, okay. Well, shall we talk about that? No, you're wrong. And I'm not going to talk to you until my concerns are addressed. Oh, okay. And in a church, it's a little more complicated because there's things that I say, but then there's council policy and yada, yada, yada. It's a full, rich community. So that's all part of this same thing. It's how can we as human beings know and love each other with and without differences.
Yeah, that's kind of it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's and, you know, even if you have a little Ukrainian flag, and you say, Paul, I want to talk to you about this. I say, oh, gosh, I got all these other people that are banging on my door for a con. Am I really going to have yet another conversation with Andrea?
Yeah. Of course, because I'm the favorite. No, it's because maybe I have a topic that's particularly pertinent.
Yes, yes. But it's also the case that here's the thing that egalitarians don't like. People get to have favorites. You know, Jordan Peterson will return Jonathan Peugeot's call because they have a personal relationship. And Jordan Peterson likes Jonathan Peugeot more than he likes me. Now I can sit here and Jordan Peterson likes Jonathan Peugeot more than he likes me. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah. Little center of the universe. But I like my children more than I like Jordan Peterson. Well, they're your kids. Well, I like the people at Living Stones more than I like Jordan Peterson. Will I answer every one of Freddie's phone calls? You have no idea how many times he calls me. Will I answer every one of Freddie's phone calls? Will I answer every one of Jordan Peterson's phone calls? Yeah, he hasn't called me yet. But if I say, oh, Jordan Peterson, if I even had his number, you know, oh, I'm going to answer the phone right away. I'm gonna stop my conversation with Andrea and pull up my phone and say, hi, Jordan, how are you?
I'm gonna fan I'll keep girl. Recording. Yeah.
So it's massively complex.
Mm-hmm.
But we're all always dealing with it. And that's why, you know, no one can make you more angry than people like family who you really do love,
mm-hmm.
and you're really angry with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So I think that it comes down to like community, and even when you know someone really well, it can be quite complicated, but I do, you're right about bringing that up. That is something to remember. But I do think that having goodwill for the other person and knowing them a bit and having a relationship in a community setting is ideal for these sorts of things. And again, this is very different from the journalist school, old school way of, because you can't be like in a community kind of getting to know people. But in the internet and social media, you can. And I think it's just down to different styles as well. I just like having a certain style. I like my congruent style where things.
And this is, and you say, well, I don't know why Jonathan Peugeot will say yes to coming on my channel. I do. And when I say, yeah, probably maybe David Fuller would do better at that conversation than you would. And so there's a little part of you. It's like, oh, I want to be the center of the universe. Yeah, me too. That's fine. We all want that. But the thing is, you bring something to these conversations that David Fuller can't. Now, you are probably not going to be on network TV as an interviewer. Why? Because that's this principality coming in and inhabiting the body of Kathy Newman.
Mm.
But you are also inhabiting things that are valuable and important. You bring, you know, I really loved your conversation with David Fuller. You bring certain things out of people by virtue of who you are. You are not inhabiting some modernist adversarial. You are a mom of three boys who wants people to, who basically wants to bring the family together. You have questions. So often what's part of the problem in some of these games is, well, I need to ask a really smart question. And there's real value to that. But you ask very honest questions, and questions that a lot of people have. And so there's your gift. That's your glory. And you have a certain warmth about you. You have an invitation about you. You have a humility about you. this is your gift. David Fuller has his gifts. Dave Rubin has his gifts. Jordan Peterson, Chris Kavanaugh, they all have their own gifts. You have your gifts. People will say yes to coming on your channel and talking to you because of your gifts.
Well, I'll know to give you a call next time I need some encouragement, Paul.
Well, there you go. That's encouraging each other is one thing we should do. But
well, okay. Well, thank you for coming on my show again in the midst of your the many
Am I
calls.
Still your number one guest, or have people?
Oh no, you are like definitely. I think this is the fifth.
Is three, it? I don't
four,
know.
Four or five. Yeah. Oh yeah.
But, you know, even the conversation that, you know, we had with Jonathan Peugeot, because of who you are, you would bring different things out of Peugeot and myself than, let's say, if David Fuller had both of us on there. It'd be a different conversation. Mm-hmm. C.S. Lewis, talking about the Inklings, Charles Williams was one of the first of that group to die. Mm-hmm. And C.S. Lewis wrote about the fact that the Inklings would never be themselves again. And part of Lewis died when Charles Williams died, because in terms of their friendship, Williams brought something out of Lewis that only Williams could bring out. And the same thing for the group. And all of us have that quality with each other if there is a degree of community that we are participating in and sharing in. And the difficulty in this dispensation is that we are very limited. There's only so much time. Mm-hmm. Therefore, we have to have hierarchies and we have to make decisions. And so, you know, I can't talk to Andrea every week and do an interview like this every week. I mean, when was the last time we did this? 6-8 months ago? Could be. You'd be surprised how long ago. Sometimes
I
go back.
I think it's like eight. It's like you last spoke with Paul Vanderclay like 8 months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And you know, I sometimes look back over my video records and think, wow, that was over a year ago the last time I talked to such and such a person. Mm-hmm. Even though it doesn't feel that long ago, because you know, maybe we've chatted on Twitter or we've chatted on the Discord or something like that, and I just have a sense that of closeness with that person, but it's been months and months and months. So no, so then to come all the way back to where this thing started.
Oh yeah, let's bring it back.
How do we talk to each other and about each other, and for what reason, and what do we do? I think it's absolutely legitimate to critique each other, but I think part of the Christian posture tends to be that this container of love makes the differences productive. Because what that means is, I've got my own trollish, reactive, off the cuff self too. And something might, for whatever reasons inside of me, hit me wrong, and I'll say something unguarded, and someone like you will be like, ouch, you know, that, you know, Paul, you're my friend, but that hurt. And then of course, if I even know, but actually there are a few of you on Twitter that I know have your little Ukrainian flags, you're not alone. And I'm friends with all of you. And it wasn't that I'm not going to take Andrew's calls anymore because that darn Ukrainian flag.
No, I should hope not.
No, and that's exactly right. You should hope not. But what that container of love allows, I think, actually is the possibility of another conversation. Mm-hmm. Because if I'd say, I'm not going to talk to anyone who has a Ukrainian flag on their Twitter handle, well, there's a whole group of people I'm not going to talk to. I'm not going to talk to anyone who disagrees with me on Roe v. Wade. Well, there's a whole group of people I'm not going to talk to. And very quickly, it's this reciprocal narrowing where there's fewer and fewer. And that's when we tend to get to, well, I have concerns about Andrea because of that little blue and yellow flag on her. I mean, you really think that this Ukrainian war is a good thing for the Ukrainian people? Did you listen to Benjamin Boyce's conversation with Curtis Yarvin yet?
No, I haven't.
It's good. It's good. You don't listen to all of Benjamin Boyce's videos?
Somehow. You mean every other day when he comes out with one, much like you?
So, but Yarvin talks about the Ukrainian war and some of the tensions within, you know, I have a degree of agreement with Yarvin on some of these things, which is interesting because we have vast disagreements in other areas. But again, given the combinatorial explosive nature of life, you know, mm-hmm. who knows? Maybe Adolf Hitler was a cat fancier. And mm-hmm. so, you know, maybe one of your...
Paint.
What's that? He loved to he paint. Loved there to you paint. Go.
So
loved to paint. So him and Churchill, maybe they could have been best buds in terms of their painting. And of course, they're trying to kill each other in terms of the war. Well, that's how we are.
Oh, I mean, Churchill and Hitler, really good spot to end on, I'd say. You never know where things will go with you, Paul.
Did this scratch where your itch? Was
it
this
did.
What you wanted
no,
to talk
it did.
About?
It's this is usually, it's the same as most of my conversations with you. It's stuff that like I know, but I don't know it in here. It's like, oh yeah, framed in love. Okay, truth and love.
Yeah.
Framed
yeah.
in community and love.
That whole Bible thing, that whole Christian thing.
Yeah, well, it's sometimes it just helps to have the thing applied specifically and have a, even though you can say, oh, just speak the truth and love. Oh, okay, gotcha. Do that in all the things. It's just nice to say, well, specifically, this is where I'm feeling conflicted.
Yeah.
And so that's, it's nice to be sort of understood and seen. So thanks.
You're welcome, Andrea. Thanks for having me on your channel.
Yeah. Oh, you're welcome.
And again, why did I agree to it? Well, you know, because we do have a relationship and I do want to support your little channel and
because it's important. Just keeps trekking away. Yeah.
Just keeps, thank you. But a lot of people might have, some people are not, they're in the hundreds or they're in the teens. And now, you know, you're how many subscribers you get?
I think I'm in 3,000.
3,000. Okay. So it's not a tiny channel, but it's not a massive channel, but you're doing something important. And so I want to encourage you. Because, and this is the beauty of YouTube, in that all of the bandwidth limitations are off, and so there can be a channel like yours. And the same for your presence on Twitter. You have a different presence on Twitter that is not, you know, shit posting or you know, trolling or any
I'm
of those.
I'm trying to make it a nice cultivated garden. That's what I'm going for.
That's what you're going for, and that's what you do. And if we don't support these people in the world who are doing the things that you do, then we can't have nice things like Twitter and YouTube.
Right, right. Then what are we doing if you're not supporting people like me? I think that's a good spot to end. So okay, thanks, Paul, for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me.
If you would subscribe, that would be the bee's knees.